The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Alabama Crops Report Podcast. Simmer, I guess we're going to talk a little corn today.
Yeah, and I'm excited to be back in our studio, I guess.
Been in the campus, Roman, yeah. Been in the Roman studios for a little while here. Yeah. Yeah, we're back on campus today.
Exactly. I think we haven't done an episode here this year, probably. I have not been on.
Yeah.
I haven't hosted.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So
anyway, we're kind of burying the lead there a little bit. So we've got Eros Francisco and David Russell on today to talk all things corn and corn herbicide management, I guess. How's it going, guys?
Doing well.
All right. Thank you.
Eros, you start the mustache over?
Yeah, I shaved last week because I trimmed incorrectly.
And yeah.
I started over.
Sawyer did that when we went to Australia. He texted me, he said, just so you know, I'm completely clean shaven. And we were like, okay. And he's like, yeah, I messed up trimming. It's a good thing about not being able to grow a beard. Yeah. You can't mess up a beard.
So have you planted any corn?
Not yet. We are about to plant this week.
You told me that last week about this week.
No, I did not told you.
Okay.
Then we got 20 degrees last week.
I know. So.
Yeah. But the planting is going on right now. It's some fields back in South Alabama, they are already up and running. Central part of the state is going on the ground right now. And I think this is about time.
I looked up weather this morning for the next, whatever Weather Channel tells you, 10 days. Every day looks good.
Let me plug. Today is Monday, March 23rd.
So hopefully we'll have a lot more planters rolling here within the next week.
Yeah, it is time. It's that time of the year that everybody's busy and everybody's trying to put pieces together. And the last bag of seeds coming or fertilizer or tractor parts and planter parts, just getting warmed up. And it's every year is a new challenge. Right now, what we see, as you just commented, weather is looking okay. I wouldn't say great because parts of the state, they're still missing one rain or two or still under drought.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is, I hope this is going to be a way better season than, I wouldn't say the last year, but the 2 or 3 years before that. Hopefully the weather is going to help. And because we do need help, the prices are not looking good.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pressure coming from the oil prices raising up to more than $100 now. And the only thing I see is that the prices are still going up because of what's going on.
What's the, I guess, let's start there. What's the corn acreage going to do in the state of Alabama this year?
Okay, the expectation is about the same, around 350,000 acres. What can prevent or put a dent on that is what's going to happen since today or next week if oil prices do increase significantly more, then nitrogen prices are going to keep rising. We have seen a change from 10 days or the end of February to now. The nitrogen prices are really different, like urea over $700 a ton, UAN 28, almost 500 a ton, and so on. So this is not good for whoever is decided to plant corn, but that's the name of the game. Challenge is the name of the game. So unless these prices calm down a bit, then we're going to see a scenario where corn is okay regarding weather. And hopefully the spring is going to be a little bit drier than last spring.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited for 26. I think we all should be excited for a new year and everything is going to be okay.
David, some positive notes. I talked to Blake Lanton this morning and he said that he was starting to see cover crops dying from burn down. So,
yeah, I had a conversation this morning of cover crops being burned down after that last cold front came through, what, a week and a half ago? So that's looking good. Unfortunately, I'm still hearing getting calls about folks trying to control Italian ryegrass. So if we're in that boat still, mid to late March, we're kind of behind the eight ball.
Yeah, the below ground issues there last a long time, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, you've got such a big root ball there in the big clumps that Lethidim, even Roundup, this time of the year is not a good option. Can't say that Paraquat's really a good option, yeah. At least not a one-shot approach, but that's a perpetual conversation through the months of February and March every year. So,
is that something too late now, but is that like a reason for a fall herbicide strategy would be to try to mitigate that risk?
Yeah, it is. Fall is good. The only thing about, you know, we hear that conversation in the Delta regions, mm-hmm. West Tennessee, Mississippi Delta, Arkansas, Louisiana, where you've got close to zero grade. So you're not really that worried about soil erosion. You know, you get up into the upper half of Alabama, especially, and throughout, it really depends on the region, but we can't just prescribe a blanket recommendation for fall applied residuals to keep ryegrass controlled just because you won't have anything.
In a certain upper part of the soil or something, I guess. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you do, but if you go into a winter fallow field, I mean, you're talking about some erosion potential through the winter
herbicide
rainy months. And then, yeah, your herbicides wash down the hill. So we just got a lot of topography in the state. So it's not a one size fits all when it comes to fall programs. Although we do have some options there, you know, your standard free type options and our Weed Science colleagues in Mississippi and Tennessee have done a lot of work in that area. Just doesn't fit every acre for us in Alabama, so we often don't talk a lot about those fall-free residuals, although it would benefit us, especially on those troublesome areas where we've got glyphosate-resistant populations, to incorporate something. And there is some newer research out there right now talking about how competitive cover crops can be. It's just that our problem is the last few years, as y'all well know, we've gotten so dry late summer and into the fall that establishing anything from a cover crop standpoint has been really tough. And that's emerging from the ground the same time ryegrass is. So trying to control one but maintain the other is pretty difficult.
I'm curious. I know when I was in Georgia, Eric Frosco used to talk about post-harvest weed control a good bit. How many growers are actually kind of doing it, or is it just like you harvest and just kind of let it, because you don't want to waste a lot of inputs in the way, not knowing what's going to happen over the next few months, right, before you get another crop season?
Yeah, that's definitely a conversation that's easier said than done. Input prices, you hit the nail on the head there, is, you know, corn, for example. Once corn comes out of the ground, comes off the field, and that crop is harvested, you know, a lot of growers are on to the next thing, and they're not throwing a lot of money and time into those acres again. And we've seen quite a bit of fields the last few years get really weedy, because you've got 2, 3, sometimes 4 months between the time that corn's harvested till the first frost. And so
you're still in peak plant growing conditions.
Yeah, easily. I mean, when is most of our corn in mid-August harvested, I guess?
Absolutely.
Right? So you still have whole fall plus January, February, mm-hmm. if not, right? So there's almost close to 6 months. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would love to see more fields going into cover crops just after corn is harvested. I know it's a challenge with the November frost happening, but if we hurry, we could, like, have a grass covering the ground from corn to November, or any type of legume, like sun hemp would be great after corn. Just give that 60 days something covering and roots growing in the ground. I mean, that's an option that we can try to help farmers to achieve.
Yeah, to Eros's point, it was pretty cool. You know, we recently took that trip together to Brazil and seeing that incorporating cover crops after a corn harvest, sun hemp, for example, or in their region, it fit really well to use a annual grass to graze, if you will. I know that doesn't fit every acre here in the state, but getting that on as soon as the crop comes off, not only can you take you get the soil benefits there too, but it covers the ground and it's very competitive against a lot of weed competition.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that, as you said, it doesn't feed 100% of the acres. But if you can, you've got to take advantage of that. If you harvest corn very early in August, just grow grass and try to graze it. That's one option for another income, right?
Yeah. Going back to you mentioned earlier on weed control, I know the stuff happening right now with the war and all that, the fertilizer prices are definitely going a lot up, right? It's changing like every day. Is that same happening with the herbicides and all that too? Or is there a little bit less effect on that?
I'm not hearing those conversations. I'm not saying that's not going on.
For some reason, crop protection inputs are traded differently, right? Like you can't just get on Google and find the price of Roundup, right?
Yeah.
Same for insecticides. So it's kind of hard to say, really. You would assume there will be some increases if things, AIs that are made overseas and having to be shipped here and that kind of stuff. But it's not like, you know, when the economists give their talks, they can show you day by day how much urea costs or whatever. And not the same.
Well, the reason for that is because to manufacture urea, you depend on gas, natural gas, and that's pretty much correlated to oil price. That's why oil prices impact nitrogen fertilizers.
Mm. I've also heard, maybe we don't need to go too much into this tangent, but
Jacob,
it's not like
pause button ready.
It's not like we are, you know, like it's not like stuff's really changing day to day. It's just the market reacting
to it.
Yeah, they have all this stock or surplus or something to get through certain days or something. It's not like the stuff's coming straight from the barges or something and getting unloaded and going straight to, you know.
The gas you put in your pickup truck today didn't show up yesterday.
Exactly. So there is that, but it's just the market reacting to all this whole. So I guess in essence, I was just trying to see, is the market reacting the same way even on the herbicide or something? Because in like a few years ago, like Roundup or all other, like they were almost twice or three times more because of some of the situation we were in back then.
Mm. Well, we heard a lot of that in the COVID era.
Yeah.
You know, that was very responsive to the market. I have not heard those conversations. Again, I know prices are high, inputs are high, but I can't say that it's as affected by what's going on now as the fertilizer and fuel prices are.
But if on one hand we have the fertilizer prices going up, on the other hand we just had 2025, a great season for corn yield and total production increase. And unfortunately, U.S. is not exporting a lot of corn.
Mm-hmm.
So that's creating a lot of in domestic or the demand for domestic use of corn.
We got a surplus, right?
Yeah, we got a surplus.
Yeah.
So that's putting pressure on price. So price is not going to change if we have a high stock of corn. So we got to deal in both ends. We got to deal in the input prices and in the corn prices. But it's an equation that we agronomists, we are not going to solve that. But
yeah.
What's our intended acres this year? Do you know?
350-ish around
that. Last year, 320?
340.
340.
Yeah. Hey, about definitely need to cut that out. That's what he started with. What were you
doing? He had the right ask of that. Oh. But anyway.
I'm just messing with you. Well, let's talk about, you know, the stuff where I actually want to tell growers, I guess. What have we learned from the last 2-3 years, I guess, going into 2026? Some things that you really kind of want to wish or like hope our growers can take advantage of or should do this year to maybe make a good crop.
Okay, so from a crop management standpoint,
planting.
From a crop management point of view, we saw 2025 being challenging with the ton of rain we got in May-ish in part of the state, And there was this big question, everyone thinking that, oh, we lost 100% of our nitrogen because of leaching or mm-hmm. or runoff due to all the rain. And we do have a study in Ivy Smith near Shorter. And we did see a response to the nitrogen applied, even though we had 10 inches of rain in May, just after nitrogen was applied. And we did see a response to the nitrogen applied because we had a control to compare. So I think the message is, don't freak out if we end up having rain after nitrogen applications. You're not going to lose 100% of nitrogen. So just calm down, evaluate the situation, call us if needed. Let's discuss. There's no reason to apply 100% of the rate again or 50% of the rate again. Let's discuss the situation. Perhaps you don't need more than 30 or 40 pounds extra, considering potential leaching or runoff. I think that was one learning lesson that we had last year. It's evident that weather is the most impacting factor in corn yield, and we saw that in 2024 due to the drought in 2022. If you see the average yield for the state, it was pre-hit in 2022 and 2024 because of the weather in July-ish, mm-hmm. Early August. So if we do have better weather situations or conditions in July, I think we can expect a good yield again in 2026. I was going to mention about La Niña, but I forgot to read about what's going on. Or
which one's
right now? If we're moving from La Niña to a normal situation, but
maybe they follow Bob Kim, right?
Can you define a normal situation?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good question about normal situation.
Rains here and there and yonder.
Timely rain throughout the year. What about weed control, David?
Similar to what Eros was just talking about, you know, I think from a weed control standpoint, considering the climate we're in, not actual climate, but also considering the market economic climate, is just to keep it simple. I tell growers all the time, you know your fields and the history of weed populations better than anybody else, so you know what to expect. If something went to seed last year, you're probably going to see it again. Mm-hmm. And using a crop and that rotation for crops in new and changing areas to kind of combat that weed pressure. You know, if it's historically a bad area with morning glory pressure and you're committed to corn in that area, we'll be prepared to fight morning glory again this year. But I tend to take a page out of the dicamba playbook last year when there was no dicamba over the top of dicamba tolerant soybeans and cotton. Going back to the basics is what we were telling folks. You know, there's still a lot of chemistries. There's still a lot of weed management tactics that we can employ. And when it comes to corn this year, you know, there is no shortage of corn herbicide products. I mean, it's like the colors of the rainbow in a Skittles bag. There's more corn premixes in a jug than there are any other crops, in my opinion. And what a lot of companies have done is they've taken a lot of the same type chemistries. You know, you're talking the atrazines and the acetachlors, the S-metolachlors, and all the HPPDs like mesotrione and timbotrione, and they're mixing and matching and changing up formulations, and it produces a lot of different products. And we have those labeled for us in our use in the South, but just because we have those doesn't necessarily mean that we need those. I think the typical Roundup atrazine programs in corn go a long way, and that's obviously the most economical. I think that's still a very good fit in a lot of cases, but I think their use is heavily dependent on timely planting. So if you're in and corn is up on time and you've already got 2-leaf, 4-leaf corn up and going before you start to see that flush of warm season weeds, well, you're already ahead of the game and you're not going to need a lot of those high dollar, multi-active ingredient type products. You can probably get away with your atrazine, Roundup, and maybe a mesotrione type Callisto type application. That'll get you through to harvest relatively clean, assuming that your corn is healthy and you've got a good stand and competitive canopy there. So that's really the approach we take. I mean, it's relatively simple, or at least we try to make it simple, that if you are either following the planter with some sort of atrazine program or coming back early post, if you don't have a lot of weed pressures, then you'll probably do okay. You know, we've got the, I think the season max of atrazine is like 2.5 pounds. So what we typically do is split that application at planting or early post, say V2, and then come back right before V6 and put the rest of it right before canopy closure. So, and with timely rainfall, as we've already talked about, we can get those soil residuals activated, the canopy closed, and hopefully we're relatively weed free all the way through. That tends to be the where we get the biggest bang for our buck.
What's the, I know there's a probably different type of issues you get calls about or you notice, or maybe what is the most common thing that happens every year and you wish like we have a control over it and growers could have done, not made a mistake or done better?
Yeah.
Something that's consistent.
A good question. I still keep going back to, and I'm sure folks are tired of hearing us talk about ryegrass, but I mean, you think back, we've, other than a few, you know, other than a few times through December and then January, we were relatively mild. I mean, we had some days where we were in the 70 degrees or touching 70 degrees in December and January, and certainly parts of February before this last cool snap that hit a week and a half ago, where we had plenty of opportunity to treat seedling grass competition. And that was the optimal time to control those populations of ryegrass. Now that we're talking flag leaf stage or knee-high tall Italian ryegrass clumps, you know, it's simply too late to do that. So it's the same messaging every year. It's a cool season grass. You anticipate that thing to germinate in November, December every year, depending on where you are in latitude across the state. So earlier the better. Again, you know, in the history of your fields and what you expect to be problematic, tackle that thing early. We are seeing an uptick in glyphosate resistant populations of ryegrass across the state, primarily in the Tennessee Valley. So that's a tool that we're seeing not as active on those populations anymore. So, you know, what we're saying is if folks feel comfortable using a paraquat product, to mix that with the group fives like atrazine ahead of corn or metribuzin or some type chemistry like that, that synergism tends to work better on those troublesome populations. But getting that out of the equation before you're ever considering planting corn is always a perpetual problem. And then in crop, it's usually morning glory.
So what about planter setup and stuff?
Well, that's like David said, I think we can emphasize, we keep emphasizing it every year, you know, but then you still keep seeing issues with seeding rates and others. And I think it goes back to, I feel like everything we talk about goes back to inputs, right? And then seed is one of the big inputs. And I still see we can do a lot better job of setting our planter properly. And I think even we, as sometimes, which we probably be a little ahead in a way, our planters are already out, checked for what do we need to be doing, all that. This was done back in February. I think that's the most important part. We can't wait until I'm going to plant tomorrow and today, this morning. I'm like, well, let me get my planter out of the shed and see. I think can be a little bit more proactive, you know, on that. In corn, planter setup is probably most important among all the other crops.
What's the old adage? You want every seed to emerge within 15 seconds of each other.
Yeah.
Steve Brown always
within said, 6 hours seconds. Or 12 hours. Seconds.
Yeah. I think if you go look back, I think it even goes up to technically anything after 48 hours delay between two emergence, I think it's going to have some sort of penalty down the road. But that's why they recommend doing flag testing.
Mm.
You can go every day and put flag right next to, you know, a seed that emerges. And like I said, it all goes back to planter stuff too.
Yeah.
Biggest bang for a buck is spending as much as time you can on your planter to make sure it's dialed in, get your seed meters set up properly, tested. Oh, biggest thing we saw, even in our planters, we did a lot of on-farm trials, seeding rate issues in a way where you think you're putting out so many seeds per acre, but your planter's overseeding. No, I think that's just wasted money right there. So stuff like that for years like these, it goes a long ways, I think.
I think we need to emphasize that because with the variety of soil types that we have within a field or a farm, one cannot start planting the same way that it ends.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to check your planter every now and then just to make sure that the soil moisture is the same, or if it is varying, you've got to adjust the planter because you've got to adjust the seeding depth. If the soil moisture changes, if the soil type changes, your planter is going to perform differently. Mm-hmm. So we need to emphasize that, and that's going to impact the way the seeds are going to emerge. And that's the way it's going to impact your final yield.
I'll say one more thing, because this will probably air at the time folks are getting ready to apply their first application or maybe close to their second application. I'm not sure. But on the topic of morning glories, for those growers out there who have troublesome populations of morning glory, we've conducted quite a bit of research over the last couple of years with the help of Wheat and Feed Grains support on looking at later timed applications of some of that group 15, group 27's herbicides, those bleachers, if you will, the mesotrione, the thimbotrione, the Laudis type or Callisto type applications. A lot of those products that are meant for broadcast applications over the top of corn, a lot of those have a V6 cutoff. So Halex GT, for example, it's got mesotrione in there or Callisto. Very good product, but one that we often refer to as sort of a standard in herbicide weed control for corn, but that cutoff is going to be right at or around V6, if I'm not mistaken. And so in troublesome morning glory populations, you're not going to be able to catch everything with that application just because it's still so early. You've got a lot of growing time left between that application and the time that corn finishes up. And as you know, when the corn matures and that canopy dries down and the sunlight hits the soil, that's when those morning glory plants are going to pop up again. So trying to delay those applications of some of those has kind of been the study of our focus. And we found that some of those like Impact or Balance Flex or Callisto or even Laudis applied sort of in a banded type application or through a lay-by type rig or even with drop nozzles for those few growers out there that may have drop nozzles to apply it underneath the canopy. What you're doing is minimizing crop injury. You're not using a broadcast over the top, but you're sort of delaying that application closer to harvest. So assuming we get a timely incorporating rainfall, those type applications underneath the canopy seems to last a little bit longer into the growing season for a cleaner harvest.
Anything else related to planting arrows?
We can talk about seeding rate. We can talk about row spacing.
What's our optimal seeding rate across the state?
Across the state? Jeez, that's too much. No, I think keep attention on if you are dry land and irrigated. I think that's the most diverse environments that we can categorize seeding rates. I would say between 24 to 28-ish dry land and 32 to 36 irrigated. We are having new trials going on, and we are seeing that in some cases, depending on the soil type and if it is a high zone or a low zone, Even 38,000 performed very well last year. There was another trial that we had 24,500, and it did great as 26 or 27, depending on the soil type. So you've got to be between that range for dry land and or irrigated. Plus, you've got to see what's your organic matter, what is your soil type, very sandy or not sandy. So we've got to tweak here and there just to be adjusted to whatever more or less seeds you need per zone. Now, let's go back to the planter. Keep an eye on the planter, because as you said, you think you are delivering such amount of seeds, and if you are delivering less, and your interpretation is based on a wrong figure. So you've got to go ahead and after emergence, count your plants, count your stand, make sure you have exact number of plants there to run the conclusions after the season.
In corn, it's so easy to check if your planter did what it's supposed to do, because every plant should come up, right? So any mistakes that happen technically, it's a lot easier to see behind corn. Whereas you go after soybeans or cotton, there's some seed that got planted, but it don't emerge. So that's all like planter. Corn emergence is a really good check of how well your planter's performing and all that. One thing I will also say, I think our growers can maybe benefit from those who already have technology on their planters. And this kind of goes to, we always kind of like, hey, you got to figure out what works best on your farm. Going back to seeding rates, technology has made it so easy that all you got to do is sit in the cab and do strip trials or put some strip seeding rates on your farm, right? And then we got yield monitors on combines, or work with your local county or extension agent, you know, to help check the yield at the end. A lot of seeding rate trials we do every year. It's amazing that 30,000 seeding rate versus 38,000, they all end up yielding the same. Sometimes you're like, well, there's a missed opportunity to actually optimize your seeding rate. And I think a lot of growers, they just back-to-back every year, stuck on that, thinking this is the rate we have always used on our farm without changing it. And our varieties have evolved, hybrids have evolved so much, they're a lot better, our environment's different every year and all. I think that's kind of another opportunity that, you know, every grower can benefit from easily, I think.
Absolutely. If you're dealing with something new this season, don't hesitate to call us to get in contact with the OREAs in your region, or call us here in Auburn. We're going to be glad to visit with you and answer any questions that you may have.
Well, with that, I'll say good conversation, guys. Enjoyed listening in. As always, as Arrow said, if any of us can ever be of any help, please don't hesitate to reach out and let us know. And I'd like to thank all our listeners for listening in. We'll be back with another episode soon.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.